Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for Banal of America
of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules, and at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. Welcome back to another special edition of Banal of America Audio. I guess we can still use the old style name here, because this is part of what we're doing is the holiday season, banality season of different shows. And as I said last week, I'm trying to incorporate some. Somebody laughed at that. I appreciate that. trying to incorporate, do different stuff instead of just sort of like bringing on one person who's been on the show a long time ago or a new person. It's like, you know, these are supposed to be special. I mean, I quasi-retired back in April and stopped doing regular shows. So it's like I can't do regular shows. We got to do something off the wall and unique. So tonight we're doing the Banal of America Christmas party with three guys who I might get a little choked up because I've become such good friends with these three guys over the last year through conversations online on Twitter. We're big Twitter heads, the three of us, the four of us. I brought on Adam just now. I hope that was Adam and
not some interloper.
Awesome. Yeah, and we've just really connected in a way. It's just unbelievable, and I really love these guys because we share sort of a lot of the same sensibilities when it comes to a lot of this stuff, UFOs and conspiracies. You know, we don't suffer fools. We recognize the absurd and can laugh in it, and we can appreciate sort of the silly while at the same time sort of, you know, rolling our eyes and shaking our heads at the people who are just lemmings to the silly. So I really, like I said, we share a lot of the same sensibilities. And I think also we're not quite old enough to be curmudgeonly, but, you know, we're still with it. We're still with the times. You know, we're not behind the times. You know, we're still with it, but like the Simpsons quote is, it's changed and we're not really sure if we want to be a part of it anymore, but we're still with it. I'll let people try and decipher that over a few bong hits tomorrow. So I'm talking about, of course, this trio of awesome guys. Adam Gorightly, he was on way back in season one. He's just a dear friend of mine. Him and I have been in some adventures. We're in a movie together, actually, coming out soon. and he's the author of a whole bunch of books. The Prankster and the Conspiracy is the one that a lot of people connect him to. Also, his work on the Discordians. And he's got a new book on contactees that he, I think, co-wrote with Greg Bishop. Yeah, coming out soon. And then there's Aaron Gullius, who is the author of a number of books, but Chaos Conundrum is the one that stood out to me as the one I first remember sort of when we first chatted on the show about. And then he's written, like, textbooks about conspiracies and stuff. So it's like when people say he's written the book on something, it's like Aaron really has written the book that's, like, been read by a whole you know, that's, like, required reading in places. It's a textbook, so, and it involves conspiracies. So he's, you know, and he teaches at a college, so he's, like a legit, genuine, bona fide expert on this stuff. And he's also the host of the fantastic podcast, The Saucer Life, which I highly recommend and people should check out. It is absolutely fantastic. And, of course, the final guy here is Jack Brewer. He's the man. He's the author of, we'll start with the book, The Graves Have Been Framed, Exploitation in the UFO Community. which is an awesome book. And like I said, it suffers no fools. That's probably the best way to put it. It's an honest broker approach to the UFO phenomenon. And of course, he's the man behind the wildly popular UFO Trail blog. So he's done some tremendous investigative journalism this year. We're not going to talk too much about that because this is a Christmas party, so we want to have a good time. But folks should check out the UFO Trail to just learn all about some of the lowlights in the world of ufology. So thank you guys for doing this. I really appreciate it. I was saying, Adam, before we got you on, I was saying to the guys, it's like I'm actually kind of nervous because I'm trying to wrangle like three different people here all at once, plus, you know, preside over the whole thing. So, you know, thank you guys for coming on and doing this.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Oh, boy. See, this is why I was nervous. I don't even know where to begin. Yes, we are. We're UFO bros or UF bros? Which we...
UFO bros? UF bros? Yeah.
It could go in a bunch of different ways. Well, let me think about where... I'll leave that up to you guys, okay? This is good. All right. So should we do a QAnon or sort of the TTSA world? Because those are like the two big sort of topics we've discussed amongst each other and stuff like that over the years.
Let's start with QAnon because that'll drive off all of the posers and amateurs. And
there you go.
Then we'll sort of have the cream of the listenership for the rest of the show.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. Well, I think we're all in agreement that the thing is kind of like crazy, crazy talk, nonsense. I guess, Adam, I'll start with you because I don't want to get into like what it is because I think people kind of know what it is. But can you do like a 2-minute thumbnail here on what QAnon is so people know what we're talking about. I know it's like I tried to do one on the Thanksgiving show and it was just me rambling like about like child sex rings and shit, and it was just after a while I'm like, I gotta stop this. Like people, it's just such an uncomfortable thing to talk about.
Yeah.
So I'll pawn it off on Adam. Give us sort of like the thing.
I'll make it real brief. Yeah, kind of spun off from Pizzagate, and it all started, I think, about a year ago. Trump made that statement about this is the calm before the storm when he was with a bunch of his generals at the White House. And so on Reddit or 4chan or wherever the hell that started, a lot of people point to the Donald subreddit where they started talking about Q. Anyway, that was a sign. There's something going on here. And this is when, you know, the Mueller investigation was starting to heat up. So I think it was kind of a response from the conspiracy guys on the right to combat. You know, there was the buzz about Mueller was going to lay down some indictments and things were starting to move with, you know, Michael Flynn. One way it was a response to that, but anyway, who Q is, that's the dude's code name. He was putting out these messages about things happening behind the scenes, how one scenario was Trump was going to break up this pedophile ring with Hillary and all her accomplices, and, you know, it's like the entire Democratic Party, they have. There's all these secret sealed indictments. First I heard 30,000, and the latest I heard was 55,000 sealed indictments. So, and they were basing this on these coded messages that were coming out, and it was kind of like this automated bot putting out these nonsense responses. But then they were also taking weird shit Trump would say and trying to weave it into this conspiracy. You know, something like Covfefe might be like the code word to launch whatever. They're going to round up some people and take them to Gitmo. So it's been this ongoing conspiracy where every day the QAnon people are interpreting the crazy shit Trump does and saying it's all part of some grand plan to bring about the Great Awakening. That's all I got.
There you go. That's perfect, dude. That pretty much sums it up. Better than I did last week. So, yeah, essentially there's like this weird they get posted as like these missives that like everybody, they go online and then people go crazy and they try to pick them apart because they're written like in these awful code. This is like awful coded sort of like poetic language that's like such, it's cheesy, quite frankly. It's cheesy. And the people, I'm amazed, I'm sure you guys saw these, like, seeing these in the last week, too, especially, they're getting more heated, these folks who are like, there was one from a guy who was like, I gave up everything once I got into this QAnon. I'm just dropped out of society. I just hang out. I'm waiting for the system to implode and shit. And it's like, dude, don't do that. Like, even if you believe this shit, you got to function in society, man. Like, don't, and as somebody pointed out, it's like the scary part is that these people, at some point, you fear that in their minds, they're like waiting for the big event, and then at some point, something happens where they're like, I'll be the big event. I will trigger this thing, and it's like, oh, shit. And I think I'm afraid we're going to get people like that guy who showed up on the bridge or the dam or whatever and was like, release the secret dossier. And everyone's like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? Like, get off the Hoover Dam with your AR-15.
I'll tell you what he was talking about.
I know what he was talking about, but yeah.
Yeah, it's with the, what do they call it, the IG report of the Clinton email investigation, and you know, it's the how the FBI handled that. And so on the QAnon side, it's like when that IG report comes out, that's when they're going to nail all the, you know, Hillary and her bunch. Of course, that didn't happen when it came out. It's just it basically said, FBI didn't handle it perfectly and blah, blah, blah. But then the buzz started that, well, no, there's a second secret report. And so that's that wacko on the Hoover Bridge. That's what he wanted. Come on, Mr. President. Don't let us down. We want that second report, the secret report.
And what's interesting, I think, about a lot of this shit. Oh, go ahead. Jack, jump in.
If Q wasn't started by an intelligence agency or even a marketing organization or something, it's some kind of experiment to see how much stuff people will soak up and what they'll believe and how best to present it to them. If it wasn't an experiment, it's certainly serving as a good one at this point. And I think a lot of different factions of society would be interested in following along with that. And like I say, even if it wasn't begun as some kind of intelligence operation or hoax by an organized group of subversives, I think it's caught their attention by now. Like I say, even just from a marketing standpoint, it's pretty much a phenomenon in itself, the extent, as Tim was saying, that some of the people believe this stuff, have wholeheartedly embraced it, and it like seems to maybe even give their life more meaning to think that like they're getting the inside info on that all the one political party is all going to be rounded up and put in jail or something. It's fascinating and frightening.
Right. I mentioned that. Hold on, Aaron. I want to pivot. I want to just ask you a question specifically. I had this in mind. And you can feel free to jump on what Jack's saying. But, I mentioned that last week, Jack, that it's like – now I lost my train of thought because I was thinking about what I wanted to ask Aaron. See? This is going to be chaos, folks. It's the chaos conundrum here at the Banal America Christmas party. Aaron, what I want to ask you – sorry to derail that whole thing there. I apologize, Jack. And other guys can jump in here, but what I find interesting about this is, like, this seems to be one of the first, maybe the Flat Earth thing as a joke sort of predated it. And to jump back now, I connect this to what Jack was saying about how this seems like a marketing thing. this strikes me as particularly interesting because it's sort of like is one of the few, maybe one of the first, like I said, other than possibly the Flat Earth, of sort of like this conspiracy that's bubbled up from the online subculture and become, like, massive, which is, like, really, I don't know, interesting. It's like, I guess it's a sign of the times we live in that's like these, you know, it's the QAnon is like the Slender Man of conspiracies or something.
That's a good way to put it. What I was going to say, and this actually I think relates to your question, is what it reminds me of is this idea of a, I think one way to put it might be a positive conspiracy theory. Instead of waiting for the UN's, you know, international global army to come in and put all the God-fearing, you know, constitutional strict construction patriots into FEMA camps, instead something good is coming. Something good is finally coming down the road, and we just have to wait, and we just have to work for it. And what it reminds me of is, and I think this is, I think there's still like, you know, three idiots and a goldfish who believe in this, but the Nisara hoax that was huge in the early part of the 21st century. And what Nisara was, what it stood for and stands for, was the National Economic Security and Recovery Act. And it was like a proposal for economic reforms that some professor talked about in the 90s, and it never went anywhere. It was just sort of an academic exercise. But there's this woman, I forget her real name, but she went by the name Dove of Oneness, which is all kinds of dumb, but she believed it was real. And that when Nisara was finally put into effect, that it would wipe out your consumer debt and everything would be better and everything would be great. And it was passed secretly, because that's how laws work, during the Clinton administration, and then it was suppressed by the Bush administration. And September 11th, if I'm remembering this right, September 11th, the attacks were a setup to distract people while they suppressed Nisara. And there's all of these laws waiting to go into place, kind of like the, you know, 30,000 sealed indictments for the Comet or Ping Pong Pizza guy, and they're finally going to put John Podesta away. There's these laws just hanging out there. And there are white hat people in the government who are trying to get this passed. But, you know, the Supreme Court has, you know, suppressed this, you know, secretly. And Nisara, you know, it ends up getting involved in this paranormal stuff. There's some channeling going on with it. And it's all connected also to a sort of money scam, Omega, Alpha or Omega, something like that. That was that a lot of people got it, Alpha or Omega, one of the two. That was you know, people got ripped off. There's a documentary called Waiting for Nisara that used to be on Netflix that looks at some of these people who have literally, you know, given up everything and are just, you know, living in near poverty, waiting for the time when their debts are wiped out and they are, you know, freed from living in whatever motel they're living in, and, you know, finally get their packet of constitutionally, you know, gold-backed currency from the federal government.
Oh,
that's kind of like what the QAnon stuff reminds me of. It's, you know, it's like you mentioned The Simpsons before. It's Bart rocking back and forth on the floor of the cabin muttering, "Krusty is coming, Krusty is coming, Krusty is coming," at Camp Krusty. And we're all just waiting for the indictments to come down so God Emperor Trump can finally drain the swamp and fix everything that's wrong in our individual lives.
Well, that raises a point, and anyone can feel free to jump in here, but to what you said, Aaron, it is interesting in the sense that it is like a quote-unquote, like a good conspiracy theory. It's a savior conspiracy theory. And that's like really, you know, the more I think about it, that's like more in line with like these UFO culty sort of aspects than your classic conspiracy theory.
I was going to say, to the stars, what's, isn't that kind of the same thing?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of similarities. Yeah. I'd also like to comment that the QAnon is interesting in that it's a positive spin. It's also interesting that it might be kind of unique in that it's gotten so much chatter in people close to the president and in the presidential administration and some of his people that are on his cell phone, you know, have open opinions about has Q been compromised and what the code meant. And that's kind of unique among these extreme ideas. But yeah, I did also agree there with Adam that there's similarities that run through them, like with To the Stars Academy, that no matter what happens, the fully committed following sees it as evidence of their beliefs, virtually no matter what the event is.
Yeah, and that's very similar to a lot of it's sort of the To the Stars stuff. I think is very much a natural outgrowth of what the disclosure movement was doing in its earlier days, back in the early 2000s. If only we can get the government to release this information openly, we can solve problems of poverty, environmental degradation, dependence on fossil fuels. You know, every problem we have, the solution is just around the corner.
Right, right. Well, that connects to something I said the other day. People were talking, and I think we've talked about this too, guys, that because we've been in this for a long time. You know, if I had the wherewithal, I'd do the math, but I bet you it's got to be like, you know, close to 100 years collectively, the four of us have looked at this stuff. And I've seen people who are sort of on the same page as us, and we're kind of like there's a pushback against people, like with our opinions, where it's like there's a stunning reversal, and it's in the QAnon, it's in the DNA of the QAnon, it's in the DNA of the TTSA stuff, where it's like there's just been a complete 180, and the sinister government that has been holding us down for all this time is now our friend. They're now on our side. And like I said, when I gave that sort of rambling introduction, it's like we're still with it, but the it in this case is the idea that the government is on our side all of a sudden for reasons, because nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. Like, I'm sorry, but nothing has changed. The president may have changed. They may have said something about this Pentagon UFO program, but like, at the end of the day, nothing has changed, which should give anyone any indication that all of a sudden the government's on our side. So that's the it that we're like scratching our heads. Like, when did that? When the fuck did that happen? Like, what is that? Adam, you're the oldest of the bunch as far as you're the most seasoned, excuse me. You're the most seasoned of the group. So what the hell is going on here? Why does everybody – why is like the sort of a large portion of the conspiracy UFO paranormal community think all of a sudden that the government is going to help us?
When did it become a good thing to stick people in FEMA camps? Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, Jack.
There's a couple things going on there. Tom DeLonge was pushing that, the deep state or the good guys. And for a long time, you know, they were suppressing UFOs because we weren't ready for it. But now we are. But then once again, his contact was John Podesta, and he's not necessarily a good guy in the eyes of QAnon, so I'm confused, yeah. I don't know, Tom. What the hell was the question, anyway? When did this start?
I guess the question is sort of like, what the hell is behind this transformation in perspective of the conspiracy and the paranormal community? Aaron, you're a scholar of the field, so what... What do you think? Because, I mean, am I the only one who's sort of, like, confused that this has happened?
Am I going crazy? I think this is a really simplistic way to put it. But I think you started to have more people in these fields trusting the government when people who claim to be currently or previously representing the government began to act trustworthy. When you have people saying, I am resigning from my Pentagon job because I want people to know the truth, sometimes it's just as simple as I believe people who tell me what I want to hear, and you don't sort of have the self-awareness to realize that's what's going on. Or one thing that has struck me is when people investigating these things, you know, currently some of the more recent people emerging, when they're asked if the government has stood in their way, they start gushing about how helpful people from the intelligence community have been in their endeavors. And I am cynical, flannel wearing, Nirvana listening Gen Xer, and I just huge red flags. What do you mean the guys from the intel community were so helpful to you? Are you drunk? You know, are you? Why would you believe them? You know, but you know, why would you believe them? Because they're telling you things that you want to hear, and or other people will pay you to, you know, talk about. So sometimes it's as simple as that.
When you find yourself in the middle of that, and Greg Bishop has pointed that out, you make some contact with somebody, or they contact you, have intelligence contacts, and they start telling you stuff that blows your mind, and all of a sudden, you know, why did they seek me out, you know? It's kind of that ego thing. Well, you're doing good work. It was the same line that Bill Moore was handed way back when. You're the only one in the field who really has a handle on this. So it strokes the ego and makes them, you know, feel more significant that they're at this center of this conspiracy, and they have access. So, you know, they want to believe what's being fed to them.
Right. Well, that ties in a sense to that sort of idea I was saying earlier about all this QAnon thing has bubbled up from the subculture, where it's like the people, that's a weird aspect of the folks who are into that stuff, because they are the epitome of like the wake up sheeple thing. They are pompous and like condescending.
They're insiders, dude. They're insiders.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, because some dude posts on 4chan, it's like, wow, man. In a sense, I think it might also be a part where it's like a garage, like our band, our hometown band made good, where it's like, holy shit, that conspiracy theory we kicked around on 4chan now is getting national news coverage.
But, you know, also it's a complicated world, you know, and these are easy answers.
Tell me about it.
Yeah.
That they found, you know, this QAnon guy has it all figured out, and hey, you got to trust the plan, man. Buy into it, everything. So it's, it's that positive aspect to it, a delusional aspect, but it makes people feel good or give them a momentary buzz. I'm sure it's quite addictive.
Yeah, that's true. And look, I'm sure I can remember back when I first got into this, although it's like a baby, those memories are slowly fading. But I can still sort of remember what's that?
So we've all get addicted to this stuff on one level or another.
Yeah.
Right.
That's why we got interested, yeah.
Yeah. I had a good laugh like a couple Christmases ago when I was at my buddy's place, and a friend of mine had just gotten, a friend of mine from high school, who became a flat earther later. I think I told that the story up in Canada, Aaron. He initially was just getting into all this. And this is how I know these people are real. Like, I don't know if UFOs are real, but I know these people are real because I know one of these people. And he, like, whipped out a dollar bill, like, at a Christmas party, ironically enough, because that's what we're doing tonight. And he was like, it's just me and him talking. And he's like, you see this? This doesn't have any intrinsic value whatsoever. It's all fiat money and just going off on this shit that I learned, like, the first time I picked up a Jim Mars book. And it was like, dude, you got a long way to go, man. You're like, I was almost envious of the journey he was about to go on, but at the same time, I was just like, wow, dude, you're in, you're all in, man. God bless you.
Yeah, when Aaron,
he's
when Aaron mentioned the one conspiracy where the people are waiting on their riches that the federal government will have to grant them. It reminded me of another one I'd heard. There's different variations of that where, like with the currency, where they believe the Fed is holding a bond on them since their birth, and that
yep.
if you get an attorney to do it the right way for you, they have to give you this money. And it had they follow clues like some kind of B-rated Tom Hanks movie, you know, that there's all these crazy clues of what kind of fringe is on this certain flag, and yeah, the dollar
yeah,
bill and all
that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, and it's like, wow. And it does circle back around to, but the people you're saying are keeping their boot on our throat is who you're saying has to give you this money if you call them on it. Like,
right.
how's that work? That, like, the rule makers have to adhere to the rule? Like, why can't they be dishonest, you know?
Because
yeah.
you know the magic words. Because you know the magic words, and they are powerless if you quote the correct, you know, secretly ratified, you know, 12th Amendment that means that everybody with Esquire after their name, you know, isn't, you know, a citizen because it's a title of nobility, and thus everything every lawyer who's ever served in government has done is invalid. And, you know, suddenly it's, you know, 1802 again, and you just need the magic words because it's all magical thinking. It's all, you know, if I do this the right way, it's casting a spell. Only it's thinking you can use laws. And like Jack said, it makes no sense. You know, it makes no sense that, oh, shoot, you know, we've been planning to lock you up in a camp, but you quoted this website, and so now we have to give you a bunch of, you know, gold or something.
And cut you loose. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're our god now, Internet man.
Yeah, it's like,
yeah.
Just look at the case of Sean David Morton for anyone who is listening to this right now and going, no, you don't know what you're talking about. It's like, I'm pretty sure Sean David Morton tried to follow most of those most of those prescriptions there, and, you know, he's in the clink. There was actually a great episode of the show News Radio that followed almost exactly what you're talking about, Aaron, where with Joe Rogan. He was the... He was like a janitor on the show, and he was the attorney.
I love that show.
He served as the attorney for the super rich guy, and he was you know, they went to trial, and he just went up to the judge, and he was like, "Tubal-cain," and the judge was like, "Case dismissed."
I need to find that episode.
And,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I'll dig it
you
out.
You know, as a proud card-carrying conspiracy theorist, I resent the absurdities because it then does make it so difficult to talk intelligently with people that aren't aware of some of the validated conspiracies. And I think some of this wilder stuff, too, you can kind of trace back to it falls in the laps of the same individuals that, you know, we can find instances of CIA consultants that stir the embers of the conspiracies about more recent mind control notions and fears. And then it seems kind of unfair to me when the conspiracy theorists get the bad rap when we can quote some of the authority figures that are kind of flaming it as well, and then tied in again with, and when we have declassified documents that show that, you know, anyone with a brain knows, of course, conspiracies exist. Some of them are real, but then it does make it all the more difficult to get intelligent and credible discussion about it when such an overwhelming amount of it is lacks critical thinking and is just kind of sensational internet stuff, you know?
Yeah, and you know, conspiracy theories are themselves a conspiracy. I think the, I don't know if it was the FBI or the CIA that actually, you know, developed the phrase conspiracy theory in the wake of the JFK assassinations, all the theorizing about that. And it was a pejorative way to describe those who had, you know, a different point of view than the official explanation. And I think they, like you say, they've been able to use that to distract from actual conspiracy. You mentioned mind control, and there's been new classified documents released lately. You know, you say mind control, and people who've looked at it on a surface level, a lot of times the first thing they think about is the, you know, the Kathy O'Brien books, right, or the Bryce Taylor books, and the lurid descriptions of Dick Cheney, and things like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just
right.
That's all conspiracy theories. It's like, well, what about all of this stuff that's documented by the government? You know, people don't dig deep enough, because that stuff, honestly, those reports are pretty boring and mind-numbing to dig through, because credible data is not always exciting when you first encounter it.
Yeah, someone's yelling at me in the chat room for I won't even get into it, but he wanted an answer to this. Adam, when are we going to get to see the hill in the hole so this guy can get his answer?
Yeah.
Early next, or sometime next year.
All right.
I'm thinking earlier. It sounds like it's completed. And so,
nice.
I don't know. I'm just the piano player, man.
Exactly, yeah.
But
I'm just
I think we'll see it next year, but it's a deal where, you know, once they get it done, they're going to look at getting it into film festivals, then on Netflix. So there's, you know, there's that whole step of how they're going to get it out to the public, which is another deal. But you know, but it's pretty much in the can, and yeah, probably
all
next
right.
year you'll be able to see it if you try hard enough. I wanted to add to this mind control stuff. Those recent
yes. Sorry. I got yelled at in the chat room. Thanks for derailing the show, chat guy. Anyway, now you know when the movie comes. Yes, let's get back to mind control.
So I didn't read any of the reports, but I heard about kind of the content, and it's more recent mind control stuff, if I'm correct, that came up during the waterboarding torture and that stuff. They were looking at drugs for interrogation.
Mm-hmm.
And the drug in question is Versed, V-E-R-S-E-D. When I saw that, I went, whoa. I have a personal experience with that. And if you go in for a colonoscopy, that's often the drug they give you. And I went in for Versed, and I went in for one... God, it's been over 10 years now, and I had no idea what they were giving me, but yeah, give me something. I don't want to feel any discomfort here. And,
yeah.
And so the way it plays out, you know, you're in there and you're they're starting the process. Okay, we're feeding you the drug, and you're talking to them, and then next thing you know, you're sitting in a room, and I'm in a room, and I'm sitting there, and my wife's there, and I'm dressed, and I go, how did I get my clothes on? And she looks at me all weird, you know, like, you okay? You've been sitting here talking to me the last 15 minutes or so. How Versed works is that you're fully conscious, awake, when you're under the influence, but you have no idea of what you might have said during that period. And that was, you know, it was probably about a half hour or so that went on, which I, at the time, was like, bizarre. This would make a hell of an interrogation tool. I could have spilled my guts to these guys. And I'm not the only one. Anybody goes in, as far as I know, for colonoscopy. It's used pretty regularly. I know my
I can verify that. I'm of the age where I've had one, I remember the nurse saying, "Oh, this will hit you like you just drank a six pack, but just straight down." And one thing I remember saying, I think this is fairly funny, is among the other goofy things I was probably saying during this whole process, when the doctor said, "Okay, we're going to start," I actually said, "Is it going to be like when the aliens took me?" Which is just a stupid, goofy-ass thing to say. But I was pumped full of Versed. And, you know, they could have, like you said, Adam, they could have asked me anything.
Yeah.
And who knows what I would have said. Now, who knows if what I would have said would have been useful as far as an answer, which is the problem with some of these sort of interrogation drugs is you don't know if what they're giving you is, you know, pure fantasy or something useful. But
sure.
Yeah, it's but in the right conditions with the right questioning and, you know, with decades of, you know, publicly funded study about how to use it for interrogation. I mean, I probably couldn't interrogate somebody with it, but a trained psychologist who'd been working on this project for decades, yeah, they probably could get something.
I mean, you could get some very simple answers like, you know, if they asked me who my wife, I'd give them a straight answer. If they asked Paul Manafort who his Russian handler is, you know, probably get a... some intel to work off of.
What Aaron's joke is funny in another way, because that's exactly kind of what I was thinking when you told that story, Adam, because it was like you hear these ideas. Maybe you can jump in here, Jack, because you've done a lot of looking at this sort of mind control and the real documents and shit, but it's like there's sort of this side theory, I guess you could say, a peripheral theory, you know, a heretical theory, I guess you could say, in some people's eyes, that, you know, that these alien abductions are just military experiments, or a large percentage of them are, or maybe even a small percentage, but they're somehow involving military experiments, and they're overlapping with and being misconstrued as alien abductions. And you know, maybe in the past I would sort of poo-poo that, but the more you look into it, it's entirely plausible that they could have been doing something like that. You know, just testing out this stuff that you guys are talking about, these drugs and stuff, you know, to see how it can be used, weaponized or something.
Yeah, there's certainly a group of people that believe that's the case. I think, like Adam was saying earlier, it is a complicated world. And there's different shades of everything. I think there's different degrees. It's probably more of a spectrum than a, you know, yes or no or all encompassing answer. Something that Adam and I were actually talking about too when we were discussing conspiracies once is, these guys that did volunteer that we know, you know, confirmed, like the Unabomber was a former MKUltra volunteer, and there's no guarantee that the things some of these people may have been subjected to, that what they ended up doing was the intention. There could be all kinds of side effect perceptions or beliefs and the whole range of possibilities when, you know, in a very literal sense, our federal government has been drugging people and not telling them what the objectives are and what they're trying to do, then sure. I mean, you got a lot of possibilities that could arise out of that, and they don't even have to be the intention of the experiment.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, because it could be a situation where it's like, oh, one of the, you know, we realized one of the side effects was that these people, being drugged is so traumatic, whatever this drug induces, such a traumatic thing that their mind creates this teleplay of being abducted by an alien or something, you know what I mean? Who knows? So,
yeah,
it could be, come from all different sides.
Kind of tying into that, like talking about the drug they were using at Guantanamo Bay. There were others too, like mefloquine was one that they were administering to all of them in very strong doses that would certainly cause degrees of psychosis and paranoia, terror, and this was in all probability a lead up to help the intensify the fear of being, you know, tortured and interrogated. And so that can leave, you know, some room to wonder what kind of hallucinations people might have, where else might this be taking place. And again, that's the problem with the real conspiracies, is it leaves the door ajar then for what if they did that over here? What if they did that in this situation or that situation? And, you know, we have the instances too, as simple as we do know unequivocally that CIA and its assets were dropping Mickeys in people's drinks and you know, mid-20th century. So there's no telling what all kinds of effects people could have had after that, and hallucinations on the way home that never even knew they'd been drugged. And it'd kind of be surprising if there aren't some fallout from that. I couldn't say, of course, to what extent it could be in the UFO community, but it'd be kind of surprising if it hadn't affected some other aspects of popular culture without our knowledge.
Yeah, seemed that way. Well, the remarkable thing about a lot of this, I was thinking about, it's kind of a little bit off topic, but in a sense it's... I think it's kind of like why we still have an appreciation for all this, even though, you know, people may think we're cynical about it. It's like, I think collectively amongst the four of us, we've heard like hundreds probably of stories of like alien encounters, you know, or contactees or sort of just like the tripping the light fantastic of possibilities, you know. And it's like, if just one of, I mean, it stands to reason that some of this shit has to be true. It can't all be wrong. So, you know, that's how I feel. It's like, it's the sheer preponderance of, like, weird, crazy stuff makes you think, like, yeah, well, you only need one white crow to show that all crows aren't black. So it's like, that's the exciting part about it. I think when people are like, oh, you believe this shit? It's like, no, I don't necessarily believe this shit, but, you know, there's so much shit that something has to be true.
Right.
And if it's true, it's like fucking the most amazing thing in the world, because it's like, there's aliens coming here. It's like, it's not a run-of-the-mill thing.
And if it's not true, what's amazing is that the stories have persisted for so long, despite not being true. So
right.
Either way, it's fascinating. And I think in many cases, people have experienced something that we don't fully yet comprehend. And so, you know, the search should be for figuring out what they encountered, not trying to prove what you come into it already believing they encountered. And I think that's a distinction that's sometimes missing.
Right. I should clarify, in a sense, I guess, to some people, it's like, I just like to fly off the handle and speculate wildly, because, like, moments before I said all that, there was a part of me that was thinking, like, what if all this UFO shit is just not real at all? And tracing back to what we were talking about earlier with mind control and stuff, and more like the marketing idea and stuff, it's like, what if the whole concept of this was just invented, like, in the 40s, and it just got wildly out of control, like a QAnon thing? Like, I think James Carrion kind of got on board with that sort of idea, that, like, the vast majority of this shit is just purely a 1940s version of QAnon that, like, got way, way beyond the control of the people who unleashed it. So it's like, I don't know what to believe. I'm down for any absolutely wild conspiracy.
I must note that I dropped some acid in the late 70s and saw some had an amazing UFO experience.
Yeah.
It would be pretty common. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was beyond anything I'd ever experienced before. You guys probably heard this before, and I saw it. So it was incredibly intense experience, and I mean, it's kind of molded my life. I'm just bringing that up because of Tim's question about have these drugs been an influence on UFO culture?
Sure.
Now, Adam, when you had that experience,
yeah.
did you like? I guess, do you think that was conjured by the drugs in your mind, or do you think that there was like an interaction with another? Not, you know, setting aside like it's an alien from another planet, like that would take, you know, that's highly speculative. Who cares about that? So it's like, but do you think that was just a product of purely of the drugs in your mind, or like that you connected with some kind of like other intelligence?
Well, there's a lot of moving parts with this story. You know, it's not a simple answer. The guy I saw these with, he saw the same thing, and as we were seeing this shit, we were talking about it. And I mean, it was a saucer. There was a cigar-shaped one. There was even a multicolored psychedelic thing with propellers. I mean, incredible stuff. But my relationship with the guy I saw it with, we're still good friends. We have written music together, that type of stuff. Have a certain simpatico, you know, telepathy thing you have with certain people. So that's one element of it. There was that connection there, which definitely influences it. But before we even saw this stuff, we were joking with each other, you know, what if we saw some UFOs? Nobody'd believe us, you know, and we started cracking up. Then 15 minutes later, we started seeing this stuff. So did we plant some type of seed
right. To
make this happen? So there's a lot of elements there. But I also, to answer your question, I felt like we were interacting with something. Were we interacting with our own minds? Were we projecting this back and forth in our own minds? We were definitely seeing something up in the sky, you know. So over the years, I've entertained like a lot of different
possibilities,
theories of what we saw.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's
yeah,
I have no answer for it at this point, and I never will.
Right.
Yeah, but at least you had the experience, though. So.
it was bitching.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I think someone was going to chime in after I went on that rant about the possibility that this was all like the UFOs were just QAnon that grew out of control. But I don't know if anyone.
I was just going to say that I would find that to be awesome. I think that would be a really, really fascinating thing if we could document the origins of this and then track how the changes to the narrative occurred and what bits of the pop culture and the various subcultures sort of drew from whatever the original, you know, sort of story was or added to it. I don't think we're probably going to find that, but just, oh gosh, no, I should write a novel where this happens, because that's such a neat idea. But like Adam, I'm an ideas man, and so we'll never
exactly. Yeah, well, that'll be like the ultimate conspiracy, where it's like there are no UFOs, but we can't, it's been 70 years, we can't tell people that, because now we'll look like even bigger assholes than if there were UFOs. So we have to keep perpetuating this thing. Oh man.
There are UFOs, of course.
Yes.
There'll always be unidentified
exactly.
Flying ship, but we don't know what it is.
Right, right. Aliens. I should replace that with aliens. That's the big thing. Well, the thing is, and I do this, and I shouldn't, but it's like, it's It's like it's like calling a facial tissue a Kleenex, where it's like, or you know, Netflix a streaming video service.
Right.
You know, I kind of just stick Alien on there as sort of like the catch-all now, where it's like, or UFO, you know what I mean? Where it's like, yeah, I think people know what I'm talking about. Where it's like, I don't know what the hell it is, folks. Like, no,
right.
We don't. None of us
like,
know. God.
Like a couple of years ago, well, when the UAP thing started to somebody tried to make that happen. Unidentified aerial phenomenon. Don't say UFO, because that's, you know, got all of this sort of, you know, it's freighted with meaning at this point. It's like Kleenex or Coke or or Netflix or you know,
it's a toxic
Band-Aid.
Brand.
Right. Not that we're saying anything against the good people at Coca-Cola. So, you know, don't tell
right.
you. But, you know, it just becomes so bound up with that there's any way to sort of get away from UFO at this point. I mean, hell, we've just only in the last 30 years really gotten away from flying saucer, which I think was a mistake. But yeah, I think UFO is going to stick.
I think it'll stick until, like, it's like the old wrestling canard, you'll appreciate this. It's like Hulk Hogan couldn't be replaced by another Hulk Hogan. It had to be Stone Cold, who was like the complete opposite, where it's like Flying Saucer mm-hmm. was replaced by the very official-sounding UFO. So now you can't replace UFO with another official-sounding acronym. It's going to have to be some other title for this thing that no one really is going to see coming. You know, where, you know,
that makes
alien
sense.
Ship
yeah.
or something like that. Yeah. You know, or, I can't even, if I could think of it, believe me, I would think of it and copyright it, like that guy that wanted to copyright Secret Space Program, but I don't,
we should just all sort of brainstorm a bunch of possible replacements for the term UFO and just, you know, trademark the hell out of them, and then just file nuisance lawsuits, and that could make up what my retirement's lost in the last couple of weeks of the stock market. So I think there's a plan.
Well, yeah, just don't invest it all in Iraqi dinar. That's a conspiracy. That's like that one you were talking about before. That was a crazy. Folks, there's people out there that think the Iraqi dinar is, like, worthless, and they think that, like, magically the U.S. government is going to, like, revive the Iraqi, whatever, the dinar. And so they bought a ton of them at, like, rock-bottom prices, and they think that, like, they have millions of Iraqi dinar, and they think that somehow, I suppose, like, if you live to be, like, if you just keep passing down your dinar, like, maybe it might work for your grandchildren, but I can't imagine.
I think it's a good idea, and I think investing in, you know, Vietnamese dong or Guatemalan quetzal would, you know, be a good thing. But I remember about the dinar thing. I mean, I first remember hearing about it. I remember my wife and I were listening to Dave Ramsey, the financial guy, and people were calling in saying, "Should I invest in the Iraqi dinar?" And he's like, "Are you stupid?" So I did some research, and the idea, I mean, it's sort of, I don't want to say it makes sense, but it sort of made sense in 2004, 2005, in the immediate aftermath of the Hussein regime falling. The idea was you buy up these Iraqi dinar, and as the government of Iraq is rebuilt as a U.S. ally in the region, the currency will increase in value. So there was sort of a logical thing, even if it was sort of overly tied to, you know, invest in Iraqi dinar if you believe in our troops' ability to fix Iraq. But now I have no idea. There's no logical basis that I've seen for expecting the dinar to increase in value other than you know, hope. Or the guy under Trump.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. That. Exactly. That's the thing. It's like, I think these people. I guess part, maybe, barring the God Emperor Trump, it's like the only way that would happen is if like Iraq could somehow get back up on its feet and be like on par with these other countries. And like I said again, it's like maybe for your kids, maybe not as far down as your grandkids, maybe your kids, you know, we'll be able to reap the benefits of that. But Iraq's like a hellhole right now. It's like they're not gonna be like this thriving part of the global community anytime soon. How did I get off on that tangent?
A minute ago you were saying you enjoy speculating, and
all the time.
I think it's important to recognize that. I think that's a place that somewhere between the conspiracy theories and then people that claim they're doing research or want to be recognized by the scientific community for their work on the UFO mystery. I think we could collectively do a better job in saying, well, here I'm speculating, and here are the actual facts, and here's what I'm going to speculate they indicate. And it seems like, again, it's a complicated world. There's a lot of different positions on the spectrum, but some people, I think, really don't understand how to do that. And I think they really don't understand how that a fact isn't something that you really, really want to believe. Like, you can't just you can't wish hard enough or debate it hard enough to make it an established fact. And when there's other people that are exploiting that lack of understanding and intentionally being misleading and, if not outright lying, they're stretching the truth. And so we start kind of having some documentaries and some companies and their people that are doing presentations that it's so clear that they had a desired point to lead the audience to from the start, that it's not an objective evaluation of data. It's not separating the facts from what they think the facts might indicate. And I think there's just a lot of problems there in trying to really exploit the public, or like if some of these people do understand how to do professional research and present a point in a coherent manner, they're not demonstrating they understand it. And I'll wrap my point up here, and thanks for letting me get this out. If you want to just speculate, as you were saying you do like to do, and I do too, nothing wrong with that. Do it till the cows come home. We can talk about anything we want. But if people want to be recognized as a professional research source, or they want to be accepted by the scientific community, there are rules and protocols and best practices in place. And you can't take your football to the baseball field and want to be accepted as a baseball player. That's just not how it works.
Exactly. There's a gulf between saying, what if XYZ, and saying, it is XYZ. And there's too many people that are just like, they're so certain about this. It connects, what you're saying connects kind of, so I got off my train of thought earlier about this, but somebody was talking about, again, this thing where people are trusting the government and trusting the military and, you know, this time's going to be different, or they're actually secretly on our side and stuff. More to the side of the UFO thing where it's like, okay, the government's really going to do it this time. And I made the point that these people that are sort of so bullish on this idea, and God bless them if they're right. God bless them if they're right. I'll be thrilled. I'll be thrilled. But I don't believe they are. But, you know, they tip their hands. You with the word, talking about words and the way words are used here, too. They tip their hands with the way they've changed from disclosure to confirmation. You know, they're tipping their hands, and they're essentially saying, literally, they have confirmation bias. So anybody who will contribute to confirming their belief system is to be embraced and to be embraced warmly, you know, regardless of how dubious they may seem to be. And if they make any mistakes along the way, if you know, the emperor has clothes is sort of the idea. No matter what, the emperor has clothes. So it's, and that to me is kind of maddening. Like, if you can't be an honest broker in this, you know, from your own perspective, I find it hard to sit down at the table with you. That's kind of the best, you know, and that's a little bit rambling, mm-hmm. but I think I kind of hit most of the points I was trying to make where,
yeah,
you know, the folks out there who are really bullish on this stuff. And again, I hope they're right. But to me, I feel like they're essentially saying, we give up. We believe this. We insist this is true. And so we're out in search of whoever will whoever will confirm it, whoever will give us the literally confirmation.
Tim, saying I hope they're right is just throwing them a bone, you know.
Listen, Adam, I am the consummate paranormal politician. You know that. Come on.
Hey, I got something else. We were talking about patenting a new name for UFOs.
Yeah.
I think I like flying saucers. I think we should have.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
right. I like flying saucers,
cool,
too.
Now,
bring it back. We should bring back flying saucers.
It brought to mind, bring us back to current politics here, but how it intersects with shit Trump has going on, you know, with QAnon and Space Force and all this stuff. The guy he appointed.
Oh, Space Force.
Yeah, Space Force is cool. Matt Whitaker, who he appointed, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I'm on like the edge of my seat to see where this is going. Yes.
Well, he oversaw, or he's part of this group called World Patent Marketing, I think their name was. And of course, you know where I'm going. They were involved with trying to trademark a kind of Bigfoot thing, and they also were doing some work with time machines, maybe hot tub time machines, and a bunch of shady shit, and they were trying, you know, they were luring in, it appears, veterans to invest in this, and according to some reports, Whitaker was kind of working as somebody to hassle people who hassled them for money when they felt they got ripped off. And probably the funniest little anecdote, and it isn't funny for the person who paid them $4,000. This is where we get to patenting something. I believe this was a vet, and he wanted to get patent for a chicken and waffle sandwich, which he paid,
oh, man.
which he paid $4,000 for.
Wow.
And when I heard that, it was
my
like,
God.
You guys, wait a minute, a patent for a chicken and waffle sandwich? It's like,
jeez,
you know,
man,
getting
that is
for a
that is next level. That is
what I find wondrous now, is, I guess this is just the way the world works, but like, we found out all this shit about this guy. And it's like because I guess he doesn't have to have a hearing or something. We're dying to know, like, how the fuck he got mixed up with Bigfoot DNA and time travel. Like, just put him on the spot where it's like, dude, are you serious? Like, did you even read any? Like, how did you get mixed up with Bigfoot, man? Oh, my God. And a chicken and waffle sandwich, and now you're the attorney general. This is insane.
This is the natural outgrowth of, I think, Andrew Basiago's presidential campaign as the time travel candidate. I think he opened the door for this kind of this kind of nonsense. And I I forgot what I was going to say. About sort of the people to whom Tim is unwisely throwing bones.
and giving hope to. I am being, you know, like super curmudgeon here, but I think, you know, this whole internet thing, the idea of the attention economy, that, you know, what gives you value as a thinker or a speaker or somebody who has information, it's YouTube views, it's ad revenue. The bar to getting your ideas out there is so low, which, you know, as far as, you know, democratization of information, yay, I guess. But there's you know, every man jack of them has a YouTube, you know, a YouTube channel with all their videos, and to get the attention, you have, what's amazing is it's like there's a prohibition on saying anything interesting. It's all the same sort of thing. You can break it down into the ancient alien category, the secret space program category, the TTSA, AATIP, you know, RESPECT category. You can break them down into these categories, and within those genres, there's very little variation in what people are saying. And there's variation in the way they're saying it, but it's amazing how simple it is to get information out there, and how simple it is to absorb a wide variety of voices. As far as conspiracy stuff goes, I mean, you guys are old enough. Tim, you mentioned you know, reading Jim Marr's books, and I know that was sort of your entree into some of this stuff, but I remember back in the day, if you wanted to get into any sort of knowledge of conspiracy stuff or even UFO stuff, you had to actually read words. You know, maybe they weren't on a printed page, but I read a whole lot of text files downloaded from, you know, gopher sites and Usenet and BBSs, but you had to read. And that meant somebody had to write. And it wasn't just, here's my 10-minute YouTube clip about the secret space force, and here's a bunch of graphics I found on Google image search, and tune in next time and be sure to hit subscribe. You know, there's the bar is so low that there's a lot of signal to noise issues going on right now. I think that's part of, I think, my frustration a little bit as a clearly elderly man who's 500 years old, it sounds like. But there's just so much crap out there. Sturgeon's Law has never been more brutally true, you know, that, you know, 90% of everything is crap, and that 90% is now absolutely huge.
Well, it's interesting. I got distracted for a moment. I'm gonna fucking tweet this out right now. I'll retweet it. This is like, let me see. I think you guys will really appreciate this. Apparently, Jerome Corsi, a document prepared by Special Counsel Robert S. Mueller's team as part of plea talks with conservative author Jerome Corsi, alleged that blah 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 blah. That's the little blurb. And there's like a graphic there, and the graphic is like a dead match for the parody of what we ran for tonight's show.
Well,
so
yeah,
if you click on,
he's one that he's like,
if you
a
click
go
on the thing
source,
there, it's crazy.
Yeah,
it's really uncanny because that's essentially exactly what I was parodying. So, oh my God, that's weird.
Wouldn't it be crazy if Alex Jones gets caught up in all this shit?
Interesting point. I think he may. I was going to connect that to all that we were talking about, in the sense where it's like, I don't recall, as I said, we're all sort of like seasoned historians on all this, and it's like, I've bemoaned, and I'm sure the long-time listeners are going to be like, oh man, but I've bemoaned this the way the world has become enveloped in conspiracy. When it used to be this cool, kitschy thing that I was into, now it's like you have to have a side in what is like a conspiracy world. And Alex Jones is a household name When I got into this, he was like a nobody. You know, he was like this rising star where it's like, he's pretty cool, that Alex Jones. And now it's like,
yeah,
oh, Jesus,
yeah.
He's just, you know, a monster.
Well, back in the day, pre-internet, you had to seek this shit out. Now you're bombarded with it around the clock.
I think the first, you know, inkling I had of Alex Jones's existence was, and I'm a broken record here, but when Bill Cooper denounced him back in, I think, 99 or 2000 or so, and he sort of picked up pretty quickly that, at least at that time, Alex Jones, in addition to, you know, really being Bill Hicks who faked his death, that Alex Jones was, it was really just a showman who was mouthing a lot of conspiracy theory-ish kind of ideas and sort of, you know, making his reputation on his infiltration into Bohemian Grove, which John Ronson has written about. And he sort of started off as I don't know if gonzo conspiracy theorist is a good way to put it, but
this sort of goofy ass,
you know, devil may care. I'm gonna infiltrate.
Performative.
Bohemian
it was like performative.
And we're like, yeah, it was yeah. It's performative conspiracy, performative conspiracism, and in the post 9/11 world, we're beyond parody sometimes, and so Alex Jones's performative conspiracism somehow became, you know, the popular image of what conspiracy theory research or parapolitics, if you want to use that word, of what it became. Meanwhile, people who are doing like actual parapolitical work and writing, like Adam, like Ken Thomas, like Peter Dale Scott, and you know, people like that, you know, well, gosh, they write books. You know, Alex Jones is on my radio, on my TV, and on my computer. It's a lot more digestible. And look at him scream and cry and get angry. And Alex Jones is a microcosm of what's happened across all types of media. It's emotive and it's entertaining and it lacks depth. And I think currently we are all sort of collectively victims of that shift.
Yeah.
I'd agree
like I
with
said, we
that.
Live. Go ahead, Jack.
I thank you. I'd agree with that. I think that Jones's behavior became culturally accepted as like an option of a public relations stance. Like, you can run a political campaign this way. You can run your corporation this way. This is the strategy. And even as we were discussing or touching on Corsi and Trump and Q and all these different extreme behavior people, I was thinking then that I bet Alex Jones is kind of jealous that he doesn't like have some royalties from all that, because he he was kind of a pioneer in that, you know. And I don't mean to put that in a good way, but he's certainly in the evolution tree.
Absolutely,
he's part of the DNA of it. Absolutely.
Yeah, and to what Adam was asking, in a sense, I think, I don't know, I think he's, I think to his benefit, like Jack was saying just now, it's like, I think he'll probably be an afterthought and possibly maybe skate by whatever's coming down the pike if there's like this massive wrap-up of the Russian conspiracy. Like, I think maybe he may,
I don't know.
I think maybe he was on the periphery of the Corsi Stone Trump constellation, Russia, you know, all that. I think maybe he was on the periphery, but I don't know. You know, it would be amusing to me.
I have a Alex Jones conspiracy theory, though, with Russia.
Ooh.
Well, I know you, like, went to work for RT and shit. Well, I think that he's – I don't want to, like, you know, say anything stupid, but, you know, I think he's probably mixed up in a lot of this stuff. Let's put it that way.
Well, it's circumstantial evidence, but let me see if I can lay it out for you, the timeline. So, and Aaron mentioned he read the biography of Bill Cooper, which is some great stuff. Recommend that to everybody. In that, the author, and I forget his name now. What's the title?
It's called Pale Horse Rider, and it's Mark Jacobson.
Yeah, well done, very balanced. He, you know, this guy was, I think he was a New York Times writer, and looks at it in a very balanced way, you know. But he gets into the Alex Jones period and how Alex Jones was influenced by Bill Cooper and how they kind of butted heads a little bit. But it also quoted, like in 99, and you can see this video on the web where Alex Jones is like going off on Vladimir Putin. He's part of the New World Order, blah, 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 blah. And this was before Alex was quite as blustery as he is now. But, you know, that's kind of interesting to put that into contrast where in 2007 or 8, he became, and that's what you mentioned, an expert analyst on Georgia, the Georgia region.
Right.
You know, during that conflict for RT, RT started in 2006, and a lot of people, if you look at that film Active Measures, I don't know if you guys have seen that.
Ooh, I need to.
Yeah, there's a flash that talks about really these psyops using the internet. They really, for Russia, really started with the Georgia conflict, and RT was part of that grand plan. You know, this was during the period where Putin had taken out a bunch of independent journalists had been assassinated, and independent media was getting taken out, and that's where he brought RT into the picture.
Yeah.
Happened during that Georgia conflict. So if we watch then the evolution of Alex Jones, jump ahead a few years when the stuff started happening in the Ukraine, and that's when a lot of the Agenda 21 stuff started about FEMA camps, NATO forces were coming over here. I think all of that was Russian propaganda, and Alex Jones was spewing a lot of that stuff. The first time I heard George Soros was behind all of this stuff wasn't that damn long ago. It was like 2015, and it was Alex Jones, as I recall. It just popped up on Facebook, and I go, what the fuck is that? You know, that seems kind of weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Turns out during that period, 2014, 2015, when the Ukraine conflict started, Soros was, he'd written the op-eds, and he was going after Putin in Russia, and that's when he, Soros became the boogeyman. And everything since then, you know, with 2016 election, was like Alex Jones and WikiLeaks and even Trump.
Exactly.
All these alt-right guys
are
on. They're basically on the same page with their talking points. And there's more evidence,
right.
Besides that, but anyway, that's my Alex Jones conspiracy. And, you know, it's circumstantial evidence. But one other thing, Kelly Jones, who is Alex's wife, who, you know,
where are we? What rabbit hole are we going down now? Yeah.
Well. She was a part owner of InfoWars, and she's, you know, they had a breakup, and they're going through child custody shit, but she's been dropping stuff on Alex. One of the things she dropped was a Russian visa, which was kind of weird. It's like, what the hell?
Oh, wow.
Alex denies he's ever been to Russia, which all these guys do, but the other part of it, she says, in like 2015 or so, when Alex kind of hooked up with Roger Stone, all of a sudden his followers or all the bots that are following got injected into his operation, as did, one would assume, more funding and that type of stuff. And you know, Alex Jones was popular up to that point, but he's even, you know, during the election, and of course he had Trump on early on, it's like he kind of exploded more into popular consciousness at that time.
Right, right, exactly. You kind of articulated, I sort of went off on a rant, and I was like, I couldn't really put to words what I was trying to say, so, but you articulated really well, where it's like, for those of us who've seen him from the beginning, there's a distinct and clear pivot where he was sort of like against overthrowing the New World Order, and that sort of thing, to now as a mouthpiece of the government.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like,
yeah.
That's a really, that's a profound metamorphosis, you know? And to me, it's like, it's worrisome. It's worrisome.
Mr. All Against the Martial or Martial Law and FEMA camps. Now he's like, let's lock them up.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I'm not sure.
What's
that
fascinating about it, too, what's fascinating about it, too, is that it was all blamed on the overlord government president, CIA. Then when your guy becomes president, you still blame it on this group that you're powerless to stop, that they keep trying to undermine the president now. After you took the hill, you still don't seem to have the hill,
yeah.
which is kind of tough to figure out. But, you know, back a few years ago when that conspiracy broke about that Obama was sending troops into Texas, the Jade Helm conspiracy,
Jade Helm.
And that, you know, they were going to take all the guns and put people on cattle cars and into the empty Walmarts and all that. I semi-knew someone that was thoroughly convinced of that, and he was like he would get hostile with me about my lack of agreeing with him. Yeah, and
yeah.
It was, I was just like, how does this work, like, with law, that the president just says for somebody to go round up citizens, and it was just crazy. I know this gets used a lot, but it really was like arguing religion with somebody.
Yeah. At the risk of being fake news, I could have sworn that I heard that they were using old Walmarts to put the kids or the families they were detaining
as they crossed
the border. Yeah.
They
were. So it's like the conspiracy theory came true, but in a way where it was but the people. So the people who were the most concerned about the old Walmarts being used as concentration camps are now all about it. They don't give a fuck.
And
the same people. Yeah.
This has got you written all over it. The Mets stayed in a Pittsburgh hotel that also hosted a convention of people dressed up as furry creatures.
Oh, no.
Is this Wilbon's worst nightmare?
No, it's worse than my worst nightmare. My worst nightmare is mascots.
Look at that.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
What are they thinking, Bobby?
All right, let me tell you something. Here's the real story here. In 40 years worth of being on the road, traveling around this great land of ours, checking into countless hotels of all stripes, here's what I've learned. There's a frightening amount of subcultures out there, Mike, and they all have conventions.
Yeah, but you've never seen these people.
I want to understand one thing.
I've never seen them.
Stay away from me.
Thank you very much.